The next topic, the ark goes missing from Jerusalem and the island of Elephantina. Ethiopian Jews, no rabbis, only priests.
I decided that I would do a book about Ethiopia's claim to possess the Ark of the Covenant.
Now, to make a book about Ethiopia's claim to the Ark of the Covenant, that is a very tiny, 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 insignificant week, according to Ion's version of the story. Would you agree,
well,
Ion?
Except for the Zionist box that may very well be in that Zion chapel.
That's
giving everybody cancer.
Did the ark that the Carpathians had require people to dance around and protect?
Nope.
If you looked at it, you'd... So,
nope.
So the monk at the Church of Zion in that Hancock meets, he's mixing up the biblical ark with the Carpathians ark.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
And that book was published in 1992, and it's called The Sign and the Seal, A Quest for the Lost Ark of the Covenant. And
why the sign and the seal? What are those things?
Well, the part of your question was also that it's assumed to be a myth that the question of the loss of the ark is not properly understood. Actually, it turns out that there is a huge mystery surrounding the disappearance of the Ark of the Covenant from ancient Israel. And doubly so, because it was the single most important object of Old Testament times. That's why it's the sign and the seal, because it's the sign and the seal of God's presence on earth. That's what it's considered to be, nothing less than that. The Temple of Solomon is built in Jerusalem around 950 before Christ, specifically as an house of rest for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. We know it stays there for hundreds of years afterwards. There are repeated accounts, but then round about 600s before Christ, the references become strange, and it sounds like they're mourning the loss of the Ark. And when the Babylonians invade Israel in 587 BC and steal everything from the temple, they don't find the Ark there. It's already gone by that point. I mean, I have to cut a long story short here, but the bottom line is that the Ethiopian claim is extremely intriguing, because it turns out that a Jewish temple, exactly modeled on Solomon's temple, was built in Upper Egypt near the modern city of Aswan on an island called Elephantina.
No, it was not. Aswan does not hold a replica of Solomon's temple, either one of them.
And he's referring to something that was caught.
It's really convenient that it was done in Aswan, where they built the dam and flooded it. So it was real convenient for that's where that to be, so it'd be under 100 feet of water.
He described the disappearance of the ark. That's true. Around the Babylonian captivity, he seemed at 570 or something. The dates may be wrong.
The storyline is great. The dates are just all screwy, yeah.
It did disappear after Babylonian destruction of the Second Temple.
Not Second Temple, First Temple.
The First Temple got destroyed, but the Levites knew it was happening, and they got out of there. Now, wait a minute. Where's Cleopatra? Oh, no, she's the one who takes it out of the First Temple.
She has the Levites take it out of the temple as payment for the money that she loaned Solomon to build the temple.
That is the First Temple we're talking about.
Yes, that is correct.
So he tying it into the second, the Babylonian captivity, 5-7, that's wrong. That's not relevant to your sense
right.
of the sequence.
Exactly. But it's just, as he says, it turns out to make a long, long story short. Well, yeah, it makes a short story long and incorrect, but that's all right.
First Temple, that temple is built to house the Ark of the Covenant?
The only reason it was built.
And they can't pay the debt on the temple, and so the Ark of the Covenant is removed from the temple, so the temple has no purpose now.
And that's how they burned the temple, made out of stone. They burned the stone to the ground. Now go figure that one out.
You're saying it did happen, but it doesn't fit within our rationality.
Right.
That's a good point, Ed.
We got the Pharaoh out of Giza, and then we're going to burn the pyramid down. Well, good luck.
But they did burn the stone.
Yeah, but they didn't
right?
burn the Wailing Wall.
You say there was a burning. Explain the anomaly to us.
Well, that's what we can't explain. We can't explain how you burn a brick building, a stone building.
Are you saying that in actual fact, the temple didn't get burnt?
Correct. It was destroyed. It was wasn't burned.
But in the writings, it says it's burned. That's what you're taking
Correct.
Issue with. And so how was it destroyed?
They removed it block by block by block.
And where'd they put it, the blocks?
Well, some of the blocks were used to build the second temple, and then Herod used those worn asundered stones to build the last temple.
They built in the same area?
Same spot. Same foundation, Bob.
Now, I recall you saying the first one was up in Asia Minor or someplace.
Well, that's where that is, Bob. That's because it wasn't in Israel then. That would have
been. Oh, okay. The land has shifted.
Right. But the point is that the foundation of all those temples are still standing today. You can go pray at it if you want to. And yet, they basically collected everything that was of value when they pillaged it. The Ark of the Covenant went out and the temple treasures went out. And then they went through and everything that was of value they could haul, Cleopatra collected her debt. She basically repossessed it.
All the treasures in the temple besides the Ark.
Besides the Ark. And if there was a very, very intricate carving in stone that they could haul out, they toted that puppy out of there. They collected.
Why was Cleopatra so wealthy that she could fund these projects?
She was a marvelous creator, and she didn't put her power in a box.
Why did she take it then? Why did she even have concern for it?
Because the deal was broken. The rule was broken. She entered into an agreement.
Yeah, she was there. Look, they built this temple with the money I lent them, and they put a box in it, all useless, but now I'm stuck with carrying it around. Why didn't she just get rid of it?
Because of the power that they held in the box. Now, that'll take you right back to the Baal story, if you pay close attention.
There was a power, and people died from it, that she had to acknowledge.
And she was happy to acknowledge because it was hers. Why would she loan the money to build the temple in the first time? They even imported timbers from Lebanon, cedars from Lebanon. I mean, that'd be kind of like going, you know, let's build a temple. Okay, I think I would like to have it made out of pine trees that came from Egypt or from China and imported the wood to build your temple out of. It's insane to think about the details that would have to go through of gathering up the materials to build this, all three of the temples. Even Herod.
She funded the creation of the Solomon's Temple because she valued the artifact and what it could do.
Well, she did, and she was trying to get busy with the whole process because she knew that power she could take advantage of because these Hebrewoids was doing a great job at whooping everybody that crossed them up. So she's like, I want to be buds with these folks.
And even though personally she had her own power, but in other words, she got seduced by the new technology. This represents the new beginning of visual space and the boxing of reality, which led to our sciences. She couldn't help but be seduced by it.
Well, it wasn't seduced. She used it to her very best advantage, Bob.
She was seduced by having it as a weapon.
Because what she did is she brought the power that was stolen from Egypt and then built a temple, and then what did she do with it? She brought it back to Egypt.
So the heart of the Jewish culture ended up back in Egypt.
Back into bondage.
All of the treasure is removed from the temple. This is not going to sit too well with those Knights Templars who are expecting to get their payment from all of the treasure that they think is in the temple.
Right.
Did the Knights Templars exist at the time of Cleopatra?
No, they most certainly did not.
But the story is that later, when the Knights Templars did exist, that they robbed the temple, and that's where their great wealth came from.
Mm-mm. They got theirs the old-timey way, Ed. They stole it.
Ion said 8 months ago to me, first there was Templardom, then there was Christendom, then there's going to be Iondom. So Templardom comes before Christendom, and Templardom, Ion said, they guarded the temples. They were the guards, I think, for the Solomon's temples.
There wasn't any treasure. They were just guarding the temple.
Did they call themselves Knights Templars because there wasn't a Christian context, or they did do it as Christians?
They
See, why do you think Knight Templardom comes before Christendom?
because it was in the same flow. It was the predecessor of Christian, of being Christ.
Right. It was that 400 years or so after the third Jesus, when Christianity has been not locked down in the manuscript culture, sort of like during the, quote, Dark Ages, we say back then.
Well, it's even better than that, because Jesus wasn't even Christian, either one of them.
So the Knights Templars were the guardians of the early Christian culture.
No, the original temple. They didn't do any religion. They still don't do religion. They just did their thing.
So they guarded the leftovers of the temples.
There wasn't anything left. They were just guarding it so nobody could see that there were no treasures in the temple. That's what they
encouraged the charisma of the temple. They kept the myth going.
Right. Because then they could control all this power and this money and this treasure that they didn't have.
You have Constantine. He's about 300 years after the third Jesus. And the Knight Templars are around during the time of Constantine?
Yes.
That's interesting. You think of the Knights as starting with the Crusades, but we're talking
right.
700 years before.
You can go right there to Istanbul, and you can see Constantine's chapel right there from the Blue Mosque, right across the way that he took over and made it the first Christian church in Turkey.
He adopted the cross, but the cross represented the Knights Templars, not the Christians.
Well, that was the Ankh.
He had the Ankh in his time?
Yeah.
So the Knights Templars had the Ankh as their symbol.
Yes.
They were devotees of the tradition of Cleopatra. They respected what Cleopatra had preserved.
It was all about the money checks, Bob. It still is.
They created this charisma around the myth of the Solomon's Temple, and that brought the money. Okay, that's pretty neat. Meanwhile, we're talking about the Ark. Where does the Ark go?
We're not going to get ahead. It's on a barge leaving
the Broadway. Right.
That's where we stay until you actually get some content.
Okay, recording.
At exactly the time that we begin to get hints that the Ark has gone missing from Jerusalem, my suggestion is that the Ark was taken out of Jerusalem because at that time, there sat on the throne of Israel a king who was regarded as a heretic and who had installed a pagan idol called an Asherah.
Now, that's a lot of gobbledygook, Greg.
No, what he's trying to tell you is that Cleopatra had collected her debt, and so they would never allow it. Well, they didn't have a choice. It wasn't theirs. The mortgage was due, and they didn't pay. So then it wasn't that things were added that were inappropriate. It was that the debt had to be paid, and so they had to pay up.
He's saying that the priests were wise people who protected this legacy, and no, they were about to be evicted.
They were employed by Cleopatra.
In the Holy of Holies of the temple, the loyal priests could never have allowed the Ark to stay in the presence of a pagan idol. I think they took it out, they took it to Egypt, they built a temple for it, they placed it there. 200 years later, and again, I'm cutting a long story very short, they were forced to flee from Egypt again. They couldn't flee north. They fled south. They followed the Nile River system. It brought them into Ethiopia around 400 before Christ. And there's extremely strong evidence that the Ark has been in Ethiopia ever since.
It has not been in Ethiopia for the last 2,500 years.
It was there for about a week as it was moving.
There may be an Ark in the Ethiopian church.
Yes, the one that they say it is, the one of Zion. Yes, okay, fine. But here, sports fans, let's get even better than that. If you came to any kind of conclusion that that was the case, are you joking? Everybody in the world would converge on that thing and take it apart, block by block by block. They'd nuke it or threaten to nuke it. They'd run a pipeline through it. They'd draw oil off of it. They'd do anything they had to do to get their hands on that super weapon. Ronald Reagan and his Star Wars spent billions to build Star Wars. All they have to do is go take over one little Zionist church in all of Ethiopia that the U.S. had been feeding for hundreds of years, to the point that they could get that magical thing that could make all the difference in every battle in all the world, the most powerful thing that's ever been. And it's held in one little bender block church, a Zionist church, in the bowels of Ethiopia.
The Carpathian Ark just had no good PR agent, just didn't have any charisma like the Jewish Ark.
Apparently, cancer's been around for a very long time, according to the Carpathians.
But it actually isn't, according to Ion.
Right.
It's new. So just the last bit here.
And just the final part of the puzzle are the Ethiopian Jews, who are known as the Falashas or the Beta Israel, the House of Israel. And they practice a pre-Talmudic, purely Old Testament form of Judaism. They don't have rabbis.
Wait a minute. How do you get pre-Talmud before the books of Moses? We are confused.
Because their rabbis are from the beginning.
Right. In the books of Moses is where the Talmud began. So if you go pre-Talmudic, what is that?
He's calling them priests.
So wait a minute. Now, if you're going to get before Abraham, well, how does that work?
Why are there Jews in Ethiopia?
Well, that's very simple. They're scattered. They're everywhere. All you got to do is have your penis circumcised, and you can be converted. They're even in Manhattan, Bob. There's a lot of Jews in Manhattan, too. Why are there Jews in Manhattan? Well, they got tired of Ethiopia.
So the next topic, the Knights Templar look for the Ark of the Covenant. Now, we'll start off. Did the Knights Templar ever have the Ark of the Covenant?
Never, never, never.
So let's see what Graham says about this.
And the Knights Templar don't say they did either.
Did they look for it?
Sure. They knew they were guarding the empty hole where it sat. So I guess they were looking around to see if it was in the basement.
So the Knights Templars, they didn't give a damn about the Ark of the Covenant, but they fed off the myth of it.
But they had the Ark of the Covenant. They had the power. Well, if they had the power, then they were a superpower. Well, if they were a superpower, then they could guide people. They were robbing the stagecoaches as they was traveling through. And so then they were the robbers, and then they could charge vigorous to get your money deposited here and pick it up there for a fee. Well, they were the robbers and the bankers, the collectors on the other end, because they had all of the temple treasure. So therefore, they could make their money checks good when they wrote the check to get them from A to B, because they were the ones robbing them on the way of the journey. So,
like the Taliban and the CIA. The Knights Templars robbed people and then offered the protection. Half of them would rob the people, and the other half would protect them, and they'd split the take.
It was the same ones. You couldn't really tell the difference.
How would they manifest their protective aspect? Or would they sort of, okay, we'll walk you to that corner down there, and then you're on your own?
No. They made it even easier than that, Bob. Because of this reign of terror where people was getting robbed because they didn't have the Federal Reserve to protect them, of course, they says, okay, go down here and see my buddy and give him your money. And he'll give you a little piece of paper. And that piece of paper ain't worth nothing, but he'll give you a little piece of paper. And we have the Ark of the Covenant and all of the temple treasure. So therefore, we are a force to be reckoned with. So we will, for a fee.
We can back it up. We can back it up.
We can back up our piece of paper. Not to mention, we've got your money, too. Then they'd get a piece of paper. They'd get down to wherever they was going. And they'd present the piece of paper, and then they could get their money minus the fee.
And then they'd get their money and go further on the journey and get robbed by the same people.
Exactly, pretty much. And or sometimes other folks that didn't enlist the full faith and backing of the FDIC, they would get the money, steal it on the way, and get to the bank down to support the end of the trail, so they'd have the money sitting there ready for the next one that did pay the vigorous to get them from A to B. So either way, they had 9 ways to Sunday.
Okay, so let's see what Graham says about the night.
When you say Solomon's Temple, what jumps out at me is in Freemasonry, they're always talking about the rebuilding of Solomon's Temple as an analogy for the building of the light body.
Okay, the Freemasonry uses the building of the temple as a metaphor for building a light body. The building light body, is that activating your parallel world traveling?
No.
Is that what it really referred to?
What is
yeah,
that?
Right. What is it? And why would you have to build it? Because you have the ability to parallel world, and they just activate it. Okay, so.
Right. The pull of this part becomes they're actually comparing Freemasonry with Knights Templars. And they're light years away from each other. That's a
okay.
Whole other thing.
The Freemasons did start around the time of the printing press.
Well, it'd be like comparing Henry VIII's church with the Catholic Church. They both had a god, but they weren't the same ones.
Was the Freemasons more aligned with the Christian god?
We can't tell, but we can tell. We can't tell.
But the Knights Templar don't connect to the Christian god.
Exactly.
Okay, here we go.
So if Solomon's Temple was where the Ark of the Covenant had been stored, then what is the relationship between that and Masonic lore and history?
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, the Freemasons trace their origins back to Hiram Abiff, to the original builder, the architect of Solomon's Temple.
Now, they apparently do that. And why do they trace themselves back to that?
Well, because that's the whole point, that they were supposed to be the murderer. The murder takes place, and that's the right, the story that they adopted to give them the same story that the Knights Templars used, because if they were the original architects of the archetype that built Solomon's Temple, for Crick Pete's sake, they'd be pretty marvelous, powerful creators, don't you think?
They put on the mythology of the Knights Templar. They adopted it to themselves.
And you ask them, that's a ritual. It's only a ritual. It's only a ritual. Doesn't mean that's what it was. Doesn't mean that's what happened. Doesn't mean that's how it started. And if it did and it was, then it would be, and then they'd all have to be Jewish. And you ask
right, so
a Mason if they're Jewish, and they'll tell you right quick, no. but then Layman is the one that gets licked out of it, and apparently he wasn't Jewish either then, I guess. Interesting. If you keep going with this storyline, you'll soon be questioning the wisdom of Solomon.
Okay.
There's an extremely interesting track and line to follow there, and that line, curiously, through the Masons, leads us to the Knights Templar.
He's got all that backwards, according to Ion, unless you're leading backwards, but he's connecting Freemasons and Knights Templars, and you're saying there's no connection.
Templars were before the Masons.
Here we go.
That was also a feature of my study in the Sign of the Seal, because I found evidence that when the Knights Templar rose to power, and we're talking the late 1100s after Christ.
He's saying the Knights Templars begin around the First Crusade, 1100 AD. You're telling us the Knights Templar existed 2,000 years before 1100 AD.
How was it that they're supposedly watching after the original Solomon's Temple, it being in 1100 VD, BC, DD, EE? How do you get there from there? I mean, if it's been gone for 400 years before 1100, how did they get it if it's been lost for 400 years? If they're the ones supposedly that had it.
Yeah.
Their primary mission in Jerusalem was not to protect pilgrims on the road between the coast and the city of Jerusalem, but actually to search for the Ark of the Covenant. They took possession of the Temple Mount, where the Temple of Solomon had stood until it was destroyed by the Babylonians. They carried out excavations there. Again, too much detail to go into here, but I believe they encountered an Ethiopian prince exiled in Jerusalem called Lalibela, and returned to Ethiopia with him. And I found Templar crosses all over some of the sacred places of Ethiopia, an extraordinary group of churches at Lalibela, hewn out of solid rock.
This sounds like the kind of thinking that's done in the Holy Blood, Holy Grail books.
They're talking about these symbols, which were Egyptian, for Pete's sake. Why would they not be there? The Ankh that they're talking about is that whole Zionist world anyway. So it'd be like saying we found sand on the beach, so this must be Hebrew.
Is the Ankh part of the Carpathian culture?
Yes.
That I believe the Templars were involved in constructing. So somehow that Masonic Templar theme that goes right back to Solomon's Temple follows the Ark into Ethiopia as well.
A skeptic could say maybe the stones are radioactive or something, but if you're describing this gold and wooden object levitating and lightning bolts shooting out of it, wouldn't it be that the radiation might be a side effect of some advanced technology?
My bet would be that the Ark of the Covenant is an out-of-place artifact. It's a piece of high technology.
I do agree with that, Ion, that it's a leftover from an atomic age. It's radioactive, the Ark of the Covenant.
There is no radio frequency that comes from the Ark, even now. It is magically imbued with the human creator's power, And that's more powerful than any atomic bomb that you come up with, past, present, or future. And then the proof of that is when they bombed Hiroshima, it didn't kill them all. So some human creators even survived that. So c'est la guerre. There is power, but the power comes from the humans, not from some ancient Samaritan Hebrewoids.
When you were describing how the Ark was used by the Jews to slay whole armies, those armies that died, everybody died.
Right.
In those armies, not just, you know, two-thirds. Hancock is saying they would bet on the idea that the Ark of the Covenant is an artifact from another era, not associated with the primitive times back then. It was a high-tech object. You're saying you're diminishing it if you call it a high-tech. It's way more powerful than a high-tech object.
Right. It's so powerful, it kills the opposing army, but doesn't kill the Hebrew army.
Does it still have that power? Yeah, if we had a rule, but not many people know about it, so if they encountered it, they wouldn't get the effect because they didn't know anything about the history of it.
That's correct.
Okay.
I trace that back through the lineage of ancient Egypt. The objects like the Ark of the Covenant are found in other Egyptian traditions.
So to trace the Ark of the Covenant back to Egypt is accurate if you know the Cleopatra story.
Absolutely.
But it's not connected to Freemasonry or the Knights Templars. It's Cleopatra.
Yeah, exactly. Who was the first Freemason, Bob?
Francis Bacon.
All right. Was he around with Solomon's Temple?
No.
Well, all right then.
The Knights Templars were medieval manuscript era mafia. The Freemasons with the British Empire riding on the new science of Bacon, they ride in on the printed book effect, which gave England, the Protestant Church, more power than the Catholic Church eventually. So the Freemasons are a product of the printing press, and they have as their ritual content is all this previous manuscript mythology of the Knights Templars going back to Egypt. That's the content of their printed book.
Absolutely, and Bacon was kind of famous for bringing in that whole flow with the Renaissance and that whole flow of what you call the Illuminati anyway, wasn't it?
And you call that the Dark Ages, from King James's Bible up to 1900, up to the Electric Age, is the non-including Electric Age.
We just love Mary's boy.
Who's Mary's
King
boy?
King James. King James.
Okay, so now we're on to Moses groomed to be a pharaoh and master of Egyptian magic.
Egypt was once my home. I was a slave. Sin sick and light did roam. Love light did crave. Yes, good.
The academics, the official archaeologists or people, scholars who might study the Ark of the Covenant in acceptable university setting, what arguments would they come up with to make fun of Hancock's fringe arguments?
Well, they probably wouldn't, because there's nothing empirical to reference it on, so science says it didn't exist. Can't use it, can't get no good out of it, nobody living got any good out of it, nobody even wrote it down as a reference point that got any good out of it. Everybody that did write it down was a different faith or religion or sect or group or whatever they were. So then it was the Babylonians and the Samaritans and the... Oh, and don't even forget the Ottomans now. The Ottomans had been jumping right in there. And the Moabites was all over the place. And the Canaanites. Oh, there's just worlds of them piled in there. So, see, the scientists wouldn't have this for 2.3 seconds at anybody's level or degree. Because they'd say, we don't have faith, we have science. So the faith that you're describing is outside the bounds of fact. Just the facts, ma'am. Remember Mr. Friday? Mr. Friday,
yeah.
Just the facts, ma'am. That's all he wants, the facts. Well, science ain't gonna have it because there ain't no facts. There's no place where it rested. There's not even them brush arbors where they stored it. They don't even have the temple to see where it's set. None of them. They don't even have, they have drawings, renditions, but they weren't from anybody that was there at that day, you see.
The next one, here we go.
The objects like the Ark of the Covenant are found in other Egyptian traditions. So let's not forget that Moses, who is the guy who climbs Mount Sinai and receives the tablets of stone from God, and who is given the blueprint of the ark, which he then passes down to builders to make for him,
I see.
That Moses is reared in the household of the Pharaoh. He is groomed as a future Pharaoh of Egypt. Now, he breaks away from that, but to be groomed as a Pharaoh is no light thing. It means that Moses would have been a master of Egyptian magic.
Ion, was Moses a master of Egyptian magic?
Well, of course he was. Remember the story when Miriam got
out
of the bulrushes?
Is Egyptian magic including knowledge of parallel world traveling in your Metek?
Yes, and turning your staff into serpents. And see, Pharaoh was a god, so Moses got introduced to how to be a god in your own Metek. Remember, this was pre-separation.
Moses was the last great take-his-own-power person before the effect of the fall of man.
Correct. And he was groomed to be a god. Pharaoh was god. Well, guess what? He's the one that stood right in Pharaoh's face and said, "Let my people go."
Where did Moses get the idea of a different god than the Pharaoh's god?
Oh, that was because he was off, when he run off and left.
When he murdered somebody.
He murdered the taskmaster. And he ran off, and that's where he found his wife, and they had a different belief. Now, where were they from? Moab. Moabite.
That gets into the powerful Moab culture.
There you go. And then they got in there, and they started picking a wife, and he was kind of like there was lots of sisters to choose from. And they was running along there, and all of a sudden, he got to learning what their religion was about.
All religions back then emphasized taking your own power, so the Moab religion might have been similar to the Pharaoh's religion.
Yes, but more of the land girl version of it. You see, the Moabites weren't into all the big temples and all that kind of business. It was about take care of the land, and then they'll take care of you.
Maybe it had less gods, less deities?
Less deities that were more powerful. That's where Moses found out about Mount Sinai the first time. Because his wife said, look at that. Moses says, honey, what in the world is that? And he says, oh, that's where God stays. What do you mean? You see the fire in the top of Mount Sinai? And he'd say, wow, I see it. Looks like a big old fire. The mountain's on top of fire through the clouds. Well, that's where the Holy of Holies is.
What's the name of Moses' wife?
Well, now, he had two wives. Her actual name was Eshi.
Eshi, and then that was the first wife that he learned about Moabism from.
Yes, that's correct. And then Moses's half-brother would have been Aaron. Then her Christian name changed.
Who's her? You don't specify. Are you talking about Eshi?
Because it's not, that's her name. But the Christian name that they give in the scriptures is different. It's not correct, so we're not going to use it. But you can look up your Christian reference to give her name.
Did she have a Christian name? I guess not.
No.
She didn't have one.
She was Moabite. She wouldn't go have a Christian name.
Who put the Christian name in? The Council of Nicaea?
The Council of Nicaea in 25. That's exactly
and, right. And the Torah, the writers of the Bible before the Old Testament, put in the Hebrew name?
But she didn't have a Hebrew name. She was Moabite.
Is it said in the Bible that she's a Moabite?
Yes.
So Moses was influenced by the Moabite culture, and he took that back to Cairo, is it?
No. It would not quite be Cairo, because Cairo was just a sidebar. This would have been closer to Alexandria.
You have Abraham already. You got Hebrew culture, but Moses brings in the Moabite tradition and makes a different kind of Hebrew culture. Or can you say the Moabites over-influenced Abraham and the Hebrews before Moses?
It was, I would say, a wash. Sure as you say it one way or the other, then you find out there's another reference that hooks that all back together.
That would be the Sumerians.
Well, right. And then this one tells that one, and that one tells this one, and they all get crisscrossed up, is what we're trying to say.
But you say there is a unifying underlying point.
Well,
and
just
that
they all got mixed together.
From the original Samaritan influence.
Yes.
That's why you use the phrase Samaritan Hebrewloid.
That's correct.
So Moses gets some Samaritan Hebrewloid Moabite wisdom when he's an outlaw, then comes back and builds a case against the Egyptian magic with that Moabite influence. That is not discussed, is it, in the Bible? I mean, that's left out, right?
Right.
That's interesting. Right. Okay, so...
He would have known Hekau, everything that the Egyptians knew about magic.
He knew the Egyptian magic, but he felt more empowered when he encountered his first wife's culture, right? He got more empowered by them than he did with the Egyptian magic?
Well, but now some of that came from... Now, you do know Moses also had a black wife. Do you want her name?
Yeah.
Okay. Jame Hakota.
What happened to Ishii?
That was before.
Black wife first in Alexandria's. That would be what a lot of African Americans identify with, the black aspect of Egyptian life.
Well, see, that she was Cushite. C-U-S-H-I-T-E. Cushite.
Well, were they part of Egypt?
Yes.
That would be the African thread in Egyptian culture?
The Ethiopian, yes.
The Ethiopian aspect. So she was an Ethiopian?
She was Ethiopian.
How did she feel when he murdered, because I assume she was with him when he murdered whoever he murdered.
No. See, there you go. It's this whole time chain thing. She was in Egypt but didn't flee with him. He left there single but very quickly took her as a wife while he was roaming around. Now, the Christian name of the final wife, now we're talking about Jethro's. That would be the father of the Christian name would have been Zipporah.
Moses, when he was on the run, he was with his black wife.
Right.
What happened to her that allowed him to, or he had both wives at the same time?
No. She they got crossed. It didn't work out.
She left, and then he finds the Ishaite. Okay, so we're doing
now
the Moab thing.
That, your scriptures talk about that, but that's referenced in Numbers.
Here we go.
I believe that incorporated into the ancient Egyptian system, first of all, a powerful belief in magic and the mm-hmm. powers of magic, not superstition, but as a practical thing, a practical skill, a power that can be used in the world.
What does he think is practical magic as opposed to what the Egyptians thought was practical magic?
We have no idea unless he's making the point. I mean, we certainly can't validate the Cox's view, but we can stretch it. This is where it would be kind, because Ed would say, well, okay, we'll give a little leeway here. Anything that you're calling magic is a power you don't understand. It's magic, if that's what you want to call it. Anything you don't get is magical. So that's just from your limitation. But if it's not magical, if you know how it works, it's no longer magic, you see?
So the phrase practical magic is an oxymoron or a contradiction.
Yeah. I mean, but see, that comes right back to the whole place of getting from Exodus 18:2, where you get Moses hooked up with his wife, when in the Numbers list the Ethiopian wife on the flip side. So they would actually cross it up. But the Ethiopian wife came first, and then Zipporah, which is now, that's not her name, but let's say it this way. That is Jethro's daughter, Zipporah. That's not what her real name was. That was the Christian rendition of it.
Here's Moses, is schooled as he grows up in Egyptian religion. He has his own power. He's getting his godhood. Then he kills somebody and runs off. Does he lose his power for a while?
No, never.
On the run?
Never. Now, wait a minute now. Here's a critical link that you've missed. And we want to make sure, because they brought it up, so we're not going to let it go. We normally would wait for ever how long it took you to ask the question. Now, which tribe was Moses from? His daddy was Amram. That's who Moses' daddy was. And that's spelled A-M-R-A-M, Amram. And Amram's wife was Jochebed. Okay, and guess what she was? She was a Levite. Now, we're talking about Moses' mama and daddy now. She was a Levite. Guess what that did? That made Moses a Levite.
There's the 12 or 13 tribes of Israel or of Hebrew culture. Amram is one of the 12. Zephram and Manasseh.
No, Amram is not a tribe. The Levite woman married a Jewish man but was not listed in a tribe. It doesn't say. Never referenced.
You asked what tribe Moses was of, and you're saying he was a Levite.
That's correct, and that's significant because of the Ark of the Covenant.
He
had the power to handle the power of the box.
Okay, back to...
And secondly, this often manifested in the form of boxes, which were carried on poles, and which contained a powerful object.
This word object triggers me. Yeah, Moses presenting his artifacts, the rod that turned into a snake and all that, and the Pharaoh had his artifacts. This battle of objects is the battle of power in the pre-writing cultures. The pre-writing cultures would have objects.
Now we say yes, except for Midian. Because you see, the Moabites, that would be found in the place of Midian, and they were the first ones to do the recording. The Midianites were the first ones to do any level of recording that didn't stand. Everybody else that, like Egypt, recorded stuff, you can still find it. Babylonians recorded stuff, you can still find it. Midian, nothing written from the Midianites, and that's who Moses' family was, from the Moabite side, from where Mount Sinai is, was the Midians, and nothing is recorded. Now, some say that the Dead Sea Scrolls came from the Midianites, but now that's conjecture that even human creators can't quite embrace.
Do you say the Dead Sea Scrolls are from the Midianites?
No, we don't. But it's significant because that'd be the first writing that is evaporated.
They understood the effects of writing and canceled it by throwing it away.
Basically, that's exactly right. And that would be your McLuhan point of the hour. But see, when we get in the Midian and the Moabite, if you get that well overlaid, all this other stuff that you're bringing, the points that are valid now. We're not saying they're not valid, but it takes a whole lot of wind out of the sails because it's all predicated on something else that already is. Most of the dynamics that are being addressed are because of something else that's been overlaid already.
Overlaid and missed and not seen.
Well, exactly, but see, that's why you have to bust it up and divide it the way you have to do. But see, you can't take the Talmud. You can't take the Torah, you can't take the books of Moses and write it just any crazy way you want to. And then Bob says, oh, but they certainly have and they certainly do. And we can't fault you or say, no, Bob, you're not correct because you really, really, really are.
Based on the given text, but there's all this other stuff that... Which is what James Joyce was trying to point out with Finnegan's Wake. We're doing an etymology or philology of culture here.
Precisely. So we should write a new book and say Finnegan is awake instead of Finnegan's Wake?
That's part of the meaning in Finnegan's Wake. Remember, it's not apostrophe S. It's F-I-N-N-E-G-A-N-S, Wake. You can put all kinds of different interpretations.
Finnegan's awake.
That's included.
Yeah.
But the word media, it's pretty close to the word media. And for most people, the word media that McLuhan popularized means electric post-book culture. That you could say a book is media, but people think of the transient information exchange and melting away all the time is our world of media. But media was the only writing culture that did not create the fall because it did not preserve its writing.
It would be pre-printing press, but it would be information flow. It would be information flow that they figured out wasn't serving them and they got shit of it.
They'd write it down and use it, and then after all, they'd say, no, this is complicated. This is like texting or email. It gets everything all garbled. Let's just go back to speech.
Typing? You mean if we just keep typing? Well, what in the hell good is all this?
What was it about the Midianites that they were clued into a race? You know, McLuhan used to quote Master Eichardt, who lived around 1300, 1400. His famous aphorism was, only the hand that erases writes the true thing.
Well, the erasing is the always redefining. Erasing is a mistake that you correct, or you have another thought that replaces that thought. Now, we're not going to be a proponent at this point because we don't want to beat Jesus' time because he was just trying to validate Marshall McLuhan. So it'll be easy with it. But that erasing point that Eichhart's trying to make is that you have the propensity for a new overlaying thought. So you can replace that with a new thought, and that's the erasure. That's the erasing. If you look up the word erasing, you are replacing.
The Midianites realized that writing screwed up the 3-2-1 process.
So I guess the Midianites' role in what you call history was to validate Eichhart's point, which vindicated Marshall McLuhan's reality, which solidified James Joyce's confusion.
That was a very accurate, precise statement. I agree with every word you said there. That was perfect.
Oh, my. Ed, we're in trouble. Yeah,
oh.
Ed.
Okay, here we go, continuing of the Cox.
Very good.
And so I think the Ark is one of a category of objects that we can trace back in ancient Egypt. Now, the people who could build the pyramids, who could move gigantic blocks of stone weighing hundreds of tons as though they weighed no more than a feather, those ancient Egyptians clearly could do a lot of things that we can't do today. Where they got it from, I don't go there.
We do
go there, right?
We go there. It's so simple. When you're a marvelous human creator and you're in your power, can be, do, or have anything. You have no limitation. You have no degradation. You have no position that eliminates you from your capacity of creation. All you have to do is speak to the stones, and the stones will move. And if you don't come into your power long enough, the stones are going to cry out, glory and honor. Just stand and you watch. As these people, human creators, start coming to their power and the winds and the waves obey their will, here's what you better know, and you better figure out real fast, because if you don't, it'll roll you over. You need to know this if you choose to. As you come into your power and you watch others around you that figure this stuff out and come into their place of power, that's when everything's going to change. That's when everything's going to change. That's when things are going to start shuffling, and that's what's going to cause your mass exodus, as we talked about before, because it's going to be so far beyond what you know, that it's going to be the fastest path to your joy not to hang around. Now, they didn't say who the original architect was for all of that building in Egypt, and we've already said real plain that was Moses. Nobody, that gets them all crossways because they don't get it, but that's all right. They can if they want to.
Freemasonry, they talk about Hiram the architect. If he was the archetypal architect, I don't know if he was, let's assume he was, they're really talking about Moses. So Freemasonry is referring to Moses if they're talking about the original great architect in Egypt.
Yeah, but him up a bond mason or a Freemason, bond them up in their guild, supposedly, and make it be all about Moses, or you make it all be about that they have to be Jews, and you're going to be having a way different conversation, aren't you?
The problem
they
that the...
themselves from Jewish.
Who does?
The Masons.
You're saying that the Freemasons distance themselves from the Jews, but they don't know they're actually referring, with the metaphor of Hiram, to the original architect Moses.
Absolutely.
Who was Jewish. Yeah.
But they talk about Solomon's temple that they were responsible for building, but they don't even acknowledge Solomon as Jew.
Who's they?
The Masons.
Okay, so here's the next.
I don't speculate, but I do argue that they were the masters of a sacred technology, a kind of magic, and that this was manifested in the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant was taken out of that system and carried off to Israel, but it continued to be a powerful object.
I mean, it seems like if the Knight Templars are spending that much manpower and time and resources searching for this Ark...
So they're missing the point that the Knights always protected the Ark, but it wasn't there, but they put on the mythology of the Ark.
They protected the building that stored the Ark.
They didn't want the Ark. They were into the outer garment.
Well, but because they weren't Levi, it would have destroyed them. If they spent all this time and energy and power looking for it, they better find some Levites to handle it or they'll be tangled up because of the rules and the regulations. It wouldn't have served them very well to steal it and get them be melted right there where they stood.
When I first met J.W., he kept telling me, Bob, I'm looking for some Levites. Are you a Levite, Bob? Okay, I'll just do this again. The Ark is the power of God.
I mean, it seems like if the Knight Templars are spending that much manpower and time and resources searching for this Ark, that they must have felt that if they had possession of it, that they would gain some really important capabilities by possessing it.
Yes, I think they absolutely did feel that.
So
I think,
what might those capabilities be?
Well, this is the power of God.
Defense system?
This is first and foremost within their system of ideas, and indeed within the system of ideas of the religion of Israel, this is the power of God.
So the Knight Templars understood and were not victims of the fall of man. They exploited those that were looking for the answer to the fall of man. And the fall of man comes in with the idea of the external God, represented by the veil and separateness in the Ark. I'm assuming the Knights Templars were the exact opposite of what they were saying. They would have nothing to do with the power of God. They just exploited it.
The point, though, is that the Ark of the Covenant was the representation of the power of God on the earth. And we say in that particular inference, yes, it is exactly that, because human creators voided themselves of their own power and magically, that seems to be the big word of the day, the magic word of the day, but they imbued their power into this box. So into this box was the power of God imbued. Yes. So is it a very powerful box? Yes. Is it been separated by a veil? Yes. Has the veil been rent in two? Yes. Is that veil now lifting or thinning to the point that that flow of power is coming into human creators? Yes. Are some human creators embracing this place of power and activating it and having marvelous, wonderful, powerful experiences being wrought into their life? Yes. How many sessions have you had, Bob, with folks that they get through and they get their place of power, and the next thing you know, you get the electronic mail that says, Ion has changed my life. I've been empowered. I've been activated. Things are happening. I didn't even know what I was asking, and I had all kinds of fun experiences, and sometimes my world got perfect, and sometimes my world went awry, but it all got cleaned up quickly because I found my place of power. That's what this is about. So those words aren't incorrect. They just have a sad application.
Okay.
This is literally the sign and the seal of God's presence, as I say, and a manifestation of his power. So if you can direct and control divine power in some way, then you're the master of the universe. And I think that ultimately, the Templars were seeking power, magical divine power, through the Ark of the Covenant. I don't think they got it. I don't think it was ever brought back to Europe. I still think it's in Ethiopia.
Graham says the Ark is in Ethiopia.
Why in the hell are you on the radio talking about it? Why aren't you in Ethiopia getting cancer and dragging it home with you? If he thought Ethiopia, why would he be having a chit-chat about it, a fireside chat about it? Why ain't he there getting it? They'll pay him a lot more money for the Ark of the Covenant than they will royalties on a show talking about where he knows it is.
The irony is that he's acting out the separateness that the Ark represents. He's separating himself from the power of the Ark.
I know where it is, and I've written a book about it, and I know all there is to know about it, and that's good, and here's the address, and buy my book, and you can have it.
Well, that's another point. He realizes that the book is way more powerful than the Ark of the Covenant, because there's more money in books than in the Ark of the Covenant at this point. So he actually knows how. No, I understand the Ark. Quadrillionaires, they got the Ark of the Covenant, but they paid dearly. The thing is that he's using a popular charismatic object, the book, to get his power. And the content of the book, he's not really interested in. He's not really interested in the Ark of the Covenant. It's just a good thing to sell books with.
You put the Ark of the Covenant on eBay, and you'll see what royalties are like.
It'll bring the quadrillionaires out of the woodwork.
And give it with a money-back guarantee, you can prove that it is. Well, when they buy it and they own it, you say, okay, now prove it. And they say, okay, stare real close. I'm going to open up the lid. You're not Levi, are you? Nope, I'm not Levi. I'm not Jewish. Okay, money-back guarantee, double or nothing. Here, look right here, and you can see. This is the Ark of the Covenant. You open the door, and zap. See, I proved it. It was. That's exactly right. Oh, you're dead. Okay. Well, I'm paid, but I'm gonna take it back home with me, just because I don't want nobody to get hurt.
Okay.
I think that the Ethiopian claim is stronger than any other. There are some loose traditions that the Ark is buried under the Temple Mount, that it's buried in a mountain in Jordan. But mm-hmm. none of these are associated with a modern, ongoing, continuous tradition of veneration of the Ark of the Covenant. There's only one country in the world where the Ark is still venerated as a living object, and that is Ethiopia. And they've become masters of concealment. There are tunnels and systems underneath Aksum where the Ark can be carried away from any threat.
Okay.
The whole city is an armed camp, thousands of men with guns, and not to be taken lightly, because these are the men, the Tigrayans, who overthrew the dictatorship of Mengistu Haile Mariam. They're a powerful force, and the Ark is everything to them, and they protect it with their lives. But there are stories of escape routes, of tunnels, of places that the Ark can be taken out, and one very intriguing story from 1896, when the Italians invade Ethiopia. The Italians were met by an Ethiopian force carrying the Ark of the Covenant, and the Italians were utterly defeated. It was the greatest ever defeat of a European by an African army in the whole history of the world. And the Ethiopians also attribute that to the power of the Ark. So I think it's a very serious claim that they have.
So it has like a remote influencing ability? Like it made them unable to fight somehow?
No. It strikes people dead.
Oh, really?
And the people
that run it can direct their minds
yes,
to...
Yes, there's a sacred lineage involved in running it. So.
It sounds like the Ethiopians are carrying on the Knights Templars tradition. They're creating the myth that they got the Ark of the Covenant to do their thuggery around.
Well, then here's J.W.'s opinion of it. If that's the case and that's true and that's right, then the next time they ask for a handout for something to eat because they're starving to death, say, get you some of the damn manna from heaven that comes from the power from the Ark of the Covenant. So from now on, if any one of you starve to death, it's your own damn fault. Poorest country in the world and sitting there starving to death, and you got the Ark of the Covenant. You own the cattle of 1,000 hills, you ought not be wanting for milk.
The idea that the Knights Templars exploit the myth of the Solomon's Temple, the Ethiopians are trying to exploit the myth of the Ark of the Covenant, and it ain't working for them.
Well, they may have it, the Carpathian version of it, and it may be powerful, but so far all they've established is that they're the poorest country in the world, they're starving to death, and everybody that looks after it's got cancers and cataracts.
That's an example of abstract concepts getting a literate man all tangled up in delusion and missing the obvious.
And illusions of grandeur.
Around the principle that undermines any grandeur that you actually could possess.
That's right. So then it would be delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
Good, Bob. Very good.
We can drop Mr. Hancock and move on to... Tell us the rest of the story about where the Ark went after it got on the boats in Zimbabwe.
Okay. Now, it gets on a barge, and it's floating east. Okay? And then it lands in a very special little place, and it's there for a very long time in Auckland.
New Zealand. And that would be before there was something called Auckland.
That is correct. And it could have stayed there, except for it got off of the parallels. It got crossed up, because, see, the Masons picked up on this with a 32nd degree and a 33rd degree and these linear lines in the 31st parallel. So then it had to go to China from Auckland.
Which dynasty was that?
After the Mongol dynasty.
After Marco Polo went to China.
That's correct.
Isn't that the 1600s? That's the Ming Dynasty, isn't it?
Well, see, that was the cross. That's what the wall, the beginning of all that wall business was about. But yes, it would have been the tail end of the Ming Dynasty.
Does it stay in China?
Yes.
That's where it is today?
It moves about.
If you get into the world of jet travel, it can move around easier.
Yeah, it sure can. Gives a new meaning to the stratosphere, doesn't it?
So you were going to say something. So, I interrupted.
The answer is, it's still on the 31st parallel, and it's where it's been the longest, has been in China, and does move about.
And does it have Levites protecting
it? Yes, it does.
So there are Jewish people associated with it.
They are from the true part sons of Levi. They are.
Once it left Zimbabwe, they moved it along the 33rd, 32nd parallel?
No. They can move it anywhere, but it won't stay long. It'll come back to the 31st, 32nd, 33rd parallel.
I would like to end on that point. There's a big mystery revealed there.
This is just scratching the surface. This is just for the beginning. This is just laying some of the foundational garments that'll come into your place of your power. The point of having this interaction is for human creators to come into their place of power. Not our power, your power. And at the end of the day, if you're listening to somebody that doesn't bring you back into your power, then it's delusional and confused. It doesn't serve you at all. If it's going to make for contrast to bring you to the place that you can have conscious thoughts, conscious, and we don't even like that word, but those that don't have their power have to serve their conscious. But if that's the case, it's all right. Use it till you can use it, till you can do better. It'll do till you can do better. Then you come into the place where you can embrace your very own power. That's what we're here for. That's what we came forth for. That's why we've always been here. We've just been sitting on the levee waiting on the Robert E. Lee.